For all of you leaders that really love to lead with integrity and truth and just really showing up for those you lead, this is the episode for you. This was an important and beautiful conversation with Jim Carlisle. And he also gave us a free gift. So for the first three people who make comments, he's going to send you an autograph book. Okay. So go ahead and comment away. Let us know what you think, what you took away from this episode, you know, why this is important to you, because a lot of you are leaders. You're leading companies and organizations, your own teams. This is going to be an episode you do not want to miss. This was amazing. Here we go. What's up, y'all? This is Dina Perez, and this is Straight Talk, No Sugar Added. And you know I go around this amazing planet finding the best humans I can find to come on here to grow, challenge, and transform your thinking. Now, you guys know I love to talk about things that challenge our thinking and leadership and life and faith and all kinds of stuff, right? Because life is multifaceted, and I love to bring people on here that can talk to their expertise and help you elevate your game. And so today I have Jim Carlisle here. Now, he's a seasoned C-suite executive who's driven explosive growth with the healthcare and health tech organizations for more than 30 years. He has really built high performance team. He has led M&A integrations, stalled, and he transformed. Jim, this is what happens when you are a podcaster. You get caught up with all the words here, right? But behind the boardroom, really, I like all he has to show. Now, I was on his website and I was reading about his amazing story, and he had a tragedy happen when he was about 8 years old, and he lost his oldest brother, George, in the Vietnam War. And this event really reshaped his family and forged his own psychology about resilience and value and driven leadership and all of that. And I really wanted Jim here because, first of all, I like who he is. He's a really great personality. He's a good person, but he also has a lot of skills and expertise behind him. So Jim, welcome to Straight Talk. How are you? It's really good to have you.
I'm glad to be here. I'm great today. I have been looking forward to this conversation for weeks.
Yeah, me too. I really liked you the first time we met. I'm like, oh, I like this guy. I'm gonna have fun. So I'm really glad you're here. And I love your story and what you're doing. So I want to start with letting people know who you are. So let's start right there. Who are you, Jim? Let's get into the deepness of that. Who are you?
Well, that's good, because I'm an open book and you can ask me any question. But I am someone...
Careful, Jim. Be careful.
And I know. I am someone who's a firm believer that leaders are not born leaders. I grew up in a family of five. My dad was a carpenter and factory worker. My mom raised the kids, but also worked in a local department store. No one in my immediate family or relatives were executive leaders. After my brother died, my dad made it his mission that said, the rest of you kids have no choice, you're going to college. And we don't know how we're going to pay for it, but you're going to college. And right there and then, at the age of 8, 9, 10, the direction was set and the path was set, and had to figure out something we were going to do in life. Ironically, prior to that, I lived in a small town in New Jersey, and I don't know why I just remembered this, but the mailman had a walking route. And I used to walk with the mailman every day on his route. And often he would ask me, what do I want to be when I grow up? When I was 4 and 5 years old, I had no clue what I wanted to be when I grew up. So I said, I knew I couldn't be a carpenter like my dad because I was born left-handed and he never let me use the power tools. So I knew that wasn't going to happen. I can use a ruler, but power tools are not allowed. So I in that conversation with him, I don't know how it got there, but I said, you know, when I grow up, I want to make money and I don't want to struggle. And he said, okay. He said, anything else? I said, yes. I don't want to do all this walking around that you do. And he said, so you don't want to be a postman? I said, no, I don't want to be a postman.
Oh, that's funny.
And for whatever reason, I said to him, I want to have a big desk. And he said, okay, you're going to be a lawyer. And from that point on, I always told people I was going to be a lawyer. Until I got to college and I realized that law school was more than just a four-year exercise in education.
Yeah.
And so I got into college and I said, I think I got to figure out what I got to do. And so my major was in psychology. I was very good in math all throughout school and especially in college. And as I was graduating college and I said, okay, where do I want to go in my life and get a job and get out in the market and the business? And I ended up getting into the insurance field of healthcare. Okay. And I worked for insurance carriers probably up until, well, several times in my career, and actually helped some startup insurance, health insurance companies as well in my career. And then I got onto the tech side in the late 90s. So I'm a combination. So everything that I've learned in leadership has been developed. It wasn't innate. Mm-hmm. Nobody passed it down in a gene to me that didn't, it doesn't exist. And in fact, when I look back on my career, I really feel sorry for the people that first worked for me when I was a manager, because I was horrible. When I think about how I manage today and how I managed in 1983 when I graduated, there's a huge difference. And I didn't understand compassion. I didn't understand empathy. I didn't understand how to, even though my degree was in psychology, I didn't understand how to observe what people were doing and saying and then helping them with that. But that has developed, and I've been blessed to have worked for some really great leaders in my career who really helped forge who I am today. And it all started in 1983.
Yeah, I really love that too. And I love the angle, like, you know, you're not born, you're a leader, it's kind of developed, right? Because I think that, you know, I don't know. To me, I have like this love-hate relationship with social media and, you know, like YouTube and all that, right? Because I love that you can find a lot of information, but I also don't like all the bad information too, right? So it's like this double-edged sword. And, you know, I feel the same way. When I was first a manager, I was just rough. You know, I was just not a good manager. I mean, I got things done, but at the expense of not being a very good manager, you know? And then as I grew older, I realized that I actually thrive more as a servant leader. I really love to serve my employees, if you will, while we're working on a team together. And it's been a really beautiful thing for me. That's just my style. So, you know, do you work with like organizations, or have you worked with organizations where they kind of just throw somebody into leadership because they did well at their job, right? So like I've had so many things happen like with bad management because they were amazing at sales, you know? So then all of a sudden now they're running teams and they suck, right? So when you're like helping like other executives or other people with that, do you see that often?
Way too often.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's interesting because I've been mentoring people for probably 25 years, maybe a little bit more. And one person for that entire length of time continues to ask me for advice and career advice. And we often talk several times a year. Some people that I mentor, I talk more frequently with. And the one thing that I noticed throughout the last 25 years is while they all knew aspects of business or could read a financial statement, they didn't know how to read the employees they were talking with and managing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I saw this common trend of traits that were missing in people. And I started helping them with that just based on my own learning and how I was managing people. Because when they came, each of them came to me to ask me to be their mentor, they all said, I want to manage like you, which is a compliment. And I've had a number of people who have worked for me in my career who continue to call me to see if I have job openings because they want to come back and work for me, which I think is a compliment.
Powerful. Yeah.
And so a year and a half ago, I started thinking about what am I going to do when I retire? And I said, I think I'm going to do a lot of fishing. And my wife said, no, you're not going to retire. Because if you retire, then you're going to be home all day with me. And that's not going to work out well. I'm just kidding. But the reality is, my brain has to always be active. And I learned that from my mom. And so I started thinking about, what am I going to do in retirement? And I thought, you know, I've been mentoring people for so long. I could make that a paying job. I could also take my talking about leadership to conferences, to colleges, and help people understand there's more to leadership than what they may be teaching you in business school, which is how to read a financial statement. And I'm not knocking our education system, but it's just there's components of it that's missing. And especially since, if you really want to be a leader, once you make that decision and go down that path, you're a leader 24/7, and you're committing yourself to being a leader moving forward. Most people are not going to fall backwards, right? Unless unfortunate tragedy happens and they're forced to. But it's a 24/7 thing, and it doesn't change. And you know, and I had somebody ask me one day, so Jim, when does leadership start? Doesn't it really start when you just get into the office and you sit down behind your desk? And my answer was no. Leadership starts when you put your feet on the floor in the morning and you get out of bed. Because everything you do from that point on, you're interacting with people, whether it's family or others from the outside or email or whatever, that is going to impact somebody. And in fact, if you do drive to work or take the subway to work, you're interacting with people the entire way. In the car, it may be somebody cuts you off and you interact in a certain way, and you know, and things go on. But if you drive to work and you park in the parking lot, you get out of your car, or you get in the first floor of the building, you're interacting with people in the elevator all the way up to where you're going, whatever floor that is. If you're in an elevator with me, I'm going to say hello to you, whether I know you or not. How many times do people get in an elevator and just stand there with their arms folded? So I would always talk to people walking into the building, whether they worked for me or not, or whether I knew them or not, because it was an opportunity to have an impact on someone and to see, to make sure people were having a good day. And if not, intercede and see if you could help them.
That's so good. Now, you also had mentioned that with all the people that you've worked with, that there was a common trait, right? So lack of a common trait. I thought you said there was a common trait. What is the common trait that you think was lacking?
So I narrowed it down to six things, and that's what I wrote about in my book. I started making a list of the characteristics that I thought people were most lacking over the last 25 years. And then I said, and I had a list, I don't know, it was about 15 characteristics long. And so I said, if I write a book about 15 things, it's going to be hard for somebody to follow that and to really take it to heart. So I narrowed it down to what I thought were the six most important things that have influenced the way I manage. And that's what I wrote about. And I wrote about it in such a way that people could not only implement it, I would talk about the pillar. I would talk about a story to emphasize the pillar. I would also give them real world examples of people who used that pillar in their own management style, so that they could also read about other leaders and learn about how they manage and how they interact with people. And then the other thing I do in the book is I give some exercises or some ways to implement it. So somebody could literally pick up the book and say, okay, today, I think I need to study compassion. And, you know, they'll read through this. The chapters are short. It's an easy read book. And they can walk away with some actionable steps to start doing better at being compassionate in the workplace, as an example.
How do you think, like somebody who's getting into leadership right now, because like I said, I work with a lot of entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, things like that. And people who I speak to all the time are building teams, all that. And that's leadership, right? So what would you think is like a vital place to start, because you said something that, you know, I resonate with a lot, which is when your feet hit the floor, your leadership begins, right? And I really believe that. And I believe that a lot of that beginning of that leadership also begins with you, because you need to lead you first, right? So, you know, I know that at least that's how I felt about it. You know, when I would wake up in the morning, I'd be like, okay, Neen, you know, these are the things that you said you're going to do. You have to lead yourself through this because you're leading a team of 20, 30 people. Just make sure you get this done, right? So I'm just wondering, like, you guys, I know that one of the pillars is compassion. What's another pillar or something that you could share with them where they need to really think about that? Because it's not about driving the hammer, right? That's how I grew up, right? You had that boss, no personality, super like mad all the time or yelling at you all the time. And I did not want to be that person, right? And I think that's actually outgrown now, but that's not how leaders lead anymore. And you can't. You know this, Jim, right? Like the new generation ain't having it. They're just not having it. So talk to me a little bit about that. How do we start creating better leaders?
So let me tell you a story of how it started for me. In 1983, the year I graduated college, now all your listeners are getting a calculator out to try to figure out how old I am. I ran for city council in the town I grew up in New Jersey. And I won. And then I won re-election 3 years later, which meant I did something right. Right after the election, the city manager asked me to come in and visit with him. And I wasn't sure what to expect. We didn't have things like voter fraud back in 1983, so that wasn't a concern. And we sat down and we started just chit-chatting. And he didn't ask me for a favor. He asked me to do something. And he said, Jim, I just want you every night when you get into bed and you put your head on the pillow, and before you close your eyes, I want you to ask yourself one question. I listened and I said, yes, and what's that? He said, I want you to ask yourself, did I do anything today for my own personal benefit that was at the expense of another individual, group of individuals, organization, company, community, or whatever? He said, if you answer no to that question, you've had a successful day. If you answered yes to that question, you needed to reevaluate what you did and how you don't ever do that again. He taught me in that lesson integrity.
Yes.
And that is the one pillar that I say is non-negotiable, because if there was ever a time in our lives that we need integrity, especially in our leaders, it's now. And do you know that since that day in November 1983, I have asked myself that question every night?
That's awesome. I think that's a lesson we could all, actually that lesson is really important for me too. And I think that's a lesson that all leaders should ask themselves, honestly, all people. Did you hurt anyone today? Did you do something that was unintegral, right? Because lots of times as human beings, we can be very selfish and we could want what we want when we want it, and sometimes at the expense of others. So that's a really great way to check yourself, right? Because it's dangerous.
And it's a good way to ensure that you're not damaging somebody else in the process.
Yeah. And it will damage you eventually too, Jim, right? You damage enough people, it will damage you, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So that's another thing, right? So I'm sure that integral lesson has served you well in all of your leadership, right? Like, have you ever, let me ask you this. It's a little bit of a personal question. You don't have to share how or what, but did you ever ask yourself that question and realize that you didn't live with integrity that day?
I have never answered yes to that question, ever.
Wow. Okay. That's awesome. Go ahead, ever. Jim. Can you please go talk to our politicians?
And I'm a firm, I mean, I told you I was an open book, but I'm a firm believer that if you're going to build a solid team or even a solid family, that integrity needle needs straight down the middle.
Yes.
Because everyone, including children, can see when you waver one way or the other from that center line. And you have to earn people's trust. And that's another thing. It's not a pillar, but trust is so important in today's society. And that's the first thing you'll lose with an employee is trust when they see you waver on the integrity needle. And when you lose that trust, you can never gain it back. And if you don't manage with integrity, you're never going to have a committed team. Mm-hmm. Think about the military general who's going to tell his group of soldiers that I'm going to lead you in the battle. I'm going to protect you. I'm going to do this. They're going to follow that leader into battle, and they have to believe in everything that they do. They have to believe in the mission and the focus.
Yep.
That's what it is to be a leader. And even in corporate America, to get people to follow, they have to believe in that vision. They have to believe that you're going to protect them and have their back, and you're going to be there for them, and they're going to follow you into battle.
It's so true. And, you know, when I was a director, right, our teams, we had different teams, different directors. And my team, actually, I was the only one with a team that never left. So they were with me the entire time I was there. Everybody else had teams that were always quitting and new hires. And I remember one of the directors saying, "What is it that you're doing? What are you doing? Because I'm losing this one again. I'm losing that one again." I said, "Well, I really try to follow the mission and purpose of the organization. And B, I make sure they know that I'm with them in the battle. I'm not just leading the battle and, hey guys, all right, have fun. I hope you crush it." You know what I mean? As opposed to me being out there with them. And there's a big difference, I think, when you're alongside and you're linking arms with them and they know you're human. There's something to be said about being honest, having vulnerability, being truthful, admitting when you're wrong, you know, making a mistake and letting them know you made one. You know, I think there's something to be said about that. Do you feel that's true?
Absolutely. I tell people we're going to make mistakes. We're going to learn from our mistakes. Yeah. That's how you grow and develop. And I also tell them I don't have all the answers. Right. And I mean, I don't think any leader has all the answers.
Right.
But it's
important. Some think they do, Jim. Correct. Some think they do.
Some think they do.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I would be the first to tell them probably not true. But the reality is we all need a leader. I have mentors to this day.
Agreed. I agree.
And I very much believe in the mentoring process and helping others learn and being helped by others when you're faced with a situation you haven't faced before.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And, you know, I think it's something that I wish more people or more leaders knew. You know, there's something, I don't know what happens, you know, like, I'm just thinking of my own life and my own, like, you know, being in corporate and all that kind of stuff and how some leaders just don't care to think of what their subordinates have to say or ideas that they have to bring. And I used to always tell one of my leaders, one of my COOs, that I really think that they should put this person in this position because this person has all of the skill sets, all of the this, all of the that. No, they're good there. But the person was never happy in that position. And I think that one of the things that happens with a lot of organizations, I don't know, you're more in that space, but is that sometimes when they place you in a position, they don't want to see you move from that position, and or they don't even think of you for the position you actually align with. And I feel like a lot of people would stay in organizations longer if you actually put them in positions that they are good, are aligned with naturally or good at naturally, right? And some people don't want to freaking be leaders. They take it because the income is better. The money that comes in is a little bit better. They don't want to do it though. And then it shows. It makes the company suffer, right?
It totally does. And the other type of leader that that is also short term is those leaders that just keep moving moving the chairs on the Titanic. They just keep moving managers in and out of positions to cover for their own inabilities. The Titanic is still going to sink. Right. It's just going to take longer to sink.
Right.
And there's a lot, and I've had leaders like that where, you know, every 2 or 3 years, they'll take half of their leadership team and rotate them out, give them other special projects or give them some other role, bring in new blood, because for the sake of, we need new blood into the organization and new ideas, mm-hmm. but yet this top position doesn't change.
Of course this, not. They're the ones moving the chairs, Jim.
Correct. They're the ones moving the chair. And that is unfortunate too. And if you look at organizations that have high turnover, you're going to see organizations mm-hmm. that don't have integrity, that don't have trust with the employees. And they operate with moving the chairs on the Titanic.
Yeah. Oh, God, so true. Now, I know that you know, just in our conversation and what I've read, you know, you are really known for revitalizing all of these struggling, you know, portfolios and guiding successful integrations and all that good stuff. So for those who are listening that are my executives and my leaders, right? What do you think is the first crucial step that they should take? Like when you're brought in, let me put it this way, when you're brought in to rescue or to scale, right? Some organization that's maybe faltering or there's something going on. What do you think is the first critical action step?
Listen.
That's good. So simple and hard at the same time.
You can't make change if you don't listen.
Right.
You know, if I walk into a struggling sales operation as an example, and I come in and say, okay, the sales process is now going to be these 20 steps, or we're going to do these, without understanding what they do today, how they do it, how can I identify the things I need to fix? The hardest thing to do is to walk in and just listen, because everybody's expecting you to walk in and start preaching, not necessarily preaching, but dictating a new way, a new pathway. I once took a role with an organization where the owners were a husband and wife team. They were looking to sell the organization, but they had not been growing. Their renewal rate on business was only 70%. And they couldn't interest any investment firms to purchase them. So they hired a COO out of Wharton, a Wharton graduate, very intelligent woman, loved working with her. They brought me in to take over all of the sales, marketing, and all of those, all the revenue side of the business. And I worked closely with the COO. We took the renewal rate within the first 6 months from 70% to 90%.
Oh, wow.
We took the sales organization. So I was asked to come in and clean out all of the salespeople, and I didn't do that. And there were several sales. Now, I did make some change in it, but the one thing the one owner wanted me to do was to get rid of some long-term people that he had hired himself that he couldn't fire. Mm. He wanted me to. And when I listened to them, what I heard was they had lost their way and didn't have a leader.
Mm.
And I gave them fresh energy, and they started knocking it out of the park.
That's awesome.
In terms of sales. And the owner of the company, the husband of the team who ran the sales, the marketing, and everything else, didn't like the fact that in less than 6 months, I had turned everything around. And so at the end, at a period of a year and a half, he came in one day and he said to me, he said, Jim, he said, we're privately held. You know, my wife and I still own this company, and I'm ripping up your comp agreement. And he literally tore it up in front of me. And I said, so is today my last day? He said, oh, no, I'm not firing you. He said, I'm just not going to pay you what I'm paying you today, because I'm paying you a lot of money. I said, yes, and I've turned it totally around. Yeah, well, I never expected that to happen. So you give me this contract, I perform to that contract, and now you don't want to honor that contract. So I said, okay. So I went home that day and I said, well, honey, it's time I have to start looking for another job. You know, he's going to just pay me my base salary and I'm not going to get paid for all the things that I fixed that he couldn't for the previous 10 years or whatever time period it was. And so it didn't take long. I found another job and I went in one morning and I said to him, I said, well, I'm here to give you my 2 weeks notice. He said, well, you can't leave. I said, wait a second. 2 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, you ripped up my comp agreement. What's going to motivate me to stay? I fixed your problem and you're not going to reward me for it. I have kids to feed. They're going to want to go to college someday. You know, that was a big part of my total compensation package.
Right.
And he said, well, okay, so what do I need to do? I said, what are you going to do?
You want a simple answer.
You have scotch tape to put the agreement back together? And so when I told him it was, you know, it was going to be my last 2 weeks, A, he was shocked that I did it. And B, he didn't know what to tell the organization. And because the whole organization really had gotten around the motivation of what I was doing on that side of the company. And now everybody was interested in it. People were socializing after work together. People were having fun. A lot of these things were happening. And, you know, he was just, he was so short-sighted.
And short-sighted, and it sounded like his ego was really wounded.
Oh, yeah. And he wanted to throw this big party for me on my last day. And I said, well, I won't be here on my last day.
I'm very surprised, right? I thought you were going to like get like tell me like a grand finale, like he tore up your thing because he was going to give you more. But I guess not, huh? Did the company stay around?
He's not. They eventually found a buyer for the company, but it took a number of years. And a lot of the people, and I don't know how many people stuck around after I left. I know of two people who performed extremely at an extremely high level there who did not stick around, but I didn't. I moved on.
And you need to. I think I like that you did that too, because it showed that you knew your worth and you knew that that you had to do something more. You know, I think, you know, sometimes people stay in these positions and jobs that they are truly unhappy with and they just stay. And they're and that, like you, to your point before, you know, everything affects everything, right? You get up, you're a leader from the moment you, because it affects your family, it affects where you're driving, it affects your home. But it's the same thing in your personal life. If you are very, very unhappy at the position that you're in or the job that you're in, it will affect your family, where you go to grocery shop. It affects everything, right? So I'm glad that you had that integrity to say, you know, I will not be treated like this. I will not, right? I love that you did that. I love that.
Yeah. And I, you know, I don't tell that story often, but the way we were just in our conversation, you know, I felt, you know, this is an appropriate time to tell about when bad things happen.
Yeah.
And it's true. If you are not having fun, now not every day is going to be fun and jovial, but of course, if you really don't enjoy what you're doing, call me. Let's talk about it.
Yes.
I'll help you find a mentor. I mean, I don't want to see people, because your family suffers with that. If
yes,
you're that unhappy in your job, you can't go home and I don't want to infect, like kick the dog, right? In frustration or take it out on your children or take it out on your spouse. I mean, you can't do that. So
take it out on yourself. Do you know how many executives are drinkers?
Yeah.
Like heavy, heavy drinkers?
But so long inside that they then end up exploding, right? And so when we look around, that's why leaders have to have compassion and they have to have empathy and they have to allow for people to enjoy what they're doing.
Yeah.
And like you said earlier, it's no longer the you're going to do this mentality in management, right?
And it's not happening.
Yeah, it's not happening. It's not happening.
People aren't listening to that. So before I wrap up, I did have a question for you, because looking back at all of your experience and all that you've done to turn things around and help all these organizations, what is like one core leadership principle that you hope to pass on to this next generation of executives and entrepreneurs that are coming up? What would you say?
In addition to integrity, compassion and empathy are similar but very different. I think it's very, very important for people to have both.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. empathy is harder than compassion. Because empathy, you have to put yourself in that person's shoes.
Yeah.
And that's a very difficult thing to do. Those are characteristics that take a long time to develop.
Yeah.
And they're even for a guy with a degree in psychology, it was not easy.
Right.
But you asked for one additional, but I think those three things are really the most critical.
Yeah. And you know, interesting to me is that if you do live in integrity, it's almost like compassion is a part of that, you know, because you are living with that integrity. So you're going to do things. I think you're going to do things with more compassion because you have integrity. Does that make sense?
Well, I believe that you can't have compassion or empathy if you don't have integrity.
Oh, there, see, that's what I mean. They're tied. Yeah, they're tied in.
Come off as fake.
Yeah.
And the worst thing you want to have is being perceived as being fake. If your compassion and empathy isn't genuine. Let me give you do we have time for an empathy story?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So when I worked at a technology company in the late 90s up through 2006, one of my teams was a team, this may resonate with you, was managing technology that was old green screen. Remember before we had a mouse? some of your listeners may resonate with that. We had developed new Windows technology to replace the green screen. And I had this team of 25, and I had to tell them that their jobs would be going away over a 3-year period as we converted customers to the new technology. And I had a really hard time thinking about what was I going to tell them?
Yeah.
Because I needed them to stay.
Yeah.
Until it was time for me to remove that position during the next 3 years.
That's tough. That's a tough position. And
I struggled. I finally came up with three things that I promised them. Number one, each person would be given as much time, advance notice, as feasibly possible. So if I knew that position was going to go away in September because client A was converting in September and it was April, they had 6 months of notice.
Okay.
That was promise number one. Promise number two was, if anyone in that engineering group or support group wanted to learn the new technology and migrate over to that side of the organization when it became time for that position to go away, I would make available the knowledgeable people to train them during the workday, during that period of time until it was time for them to transition.
Oh, wow.
I also said, if you decide that you want to look for a different role, I would help you find a different role.
In the organization or anywhere?
In the organization. But okay. The third thing I committed was that if anyone didn't want to stay in the organization, I would personally help them on the outside find a role that was appropriate for them.
Wow.
My sole goal, somewhat selfish for the organization, was that I couldn't afford for somebody to leave before it was time, or we would be shorthanded to supporting those customers.
Yeah.
That was
But listen to all that support though, Jim, right? So yeah, it might have sounded or felt selfish, but it also help them, because that's powerful for somebody who is leading you to give you those promises. Now, because Jim is a person of integrity, I'm sure that they felt like, okay, I'm going to stick it out until Jim says it's time. Did that happen or did they leave?
100% of them stayed until it was time to go.
Yeah, I knew it.
However, a second thing happened that I never expected.
What's that?
That group of 25 for the next 2.5-3 years, for those that stuck around, had the highest, well, whoever was there at the point in time they took an employee survey, they always had the highest employee satisfaction rating in the company.
Wow.
Yet their jobs were going away.
Yeah, wow.
I never expected that. The first year, HR came to me and sat down and said, we need to talk about the results of this group out in Oakland. And I said, okay, how bad is it? And they said, well, that's the problem. We expected it to be terrible, but they beat every organization in this company. They have the highest, have the highest employee satisfaction, which to me said, I did the right thing.
Yeah.
Because I knew, I said to myself going into it, what would I want from my manager?
Yeah.
If they told me my job was going to go away.
Yeah.
And that's where I came up with the three things. I gave them, I gave them a parachute to save them or a life jacket to save them in any option that they wanted to choose.
I love that story so much because I think that all of us who are listening and leading, we really need to remember that it is so much easier if you just address the elephant in the room. You know, instead of trying to like put the elephant to the side, look, you eat an elephant one bite at a time, just address the elephant in the room. I'm the same way, Jim. Like if there's an elephant in the room, we're going to deal with this bad boy because if there's clarity, we can actually start moving forward together. Right. And a lot of times people don't do that. They don't want to address the elephant. So they just go around it and they skirt. And what happens with that? There's talk near the water cooler, you know? Cool. And all the talk near the water cooler is not the right thing. It's all a lie, right? So thank you so much, Jim, for everything, for who you are and what you do and how you're helping people and organizations and all of that and your book and everything. So I would love you to lead us to where those resources are and also how people can contact you to talk to you about, you know, how they can grow as leaders. So give us that information.
Certainly. And then I'm going to give you a surprise at the end. So, okay. If anyone wants to reach out to me, the easiest way is through my website, which is very easy. If you see my name on the screen, it's just www.jimcarlo.com with no space or no period between the first name and the last name. There's a form you can fill out to reach out to contact me if you have questions about mentorship, questions about anything that we've talked about today, want more information, or even you can check a box if you even want to buy a copy of the book. So that's available to them. So here's the surprise. I'm going to offer to your listeners for the first three people that post on your podcast what they got from today's episode, an autographed copy of my book.
Oh, awesome.
Nina, all you need to do is send me the name, what they said, and their shipping address, and I will ship them a copy of my book for free.
I'm writing it down. Okay. Thank you, Jim. That's really kind.
And hold me to that. But yes, because okay. I'd like to understand what resonates most with people. And I think you would too, because I think that helps us learn. And, it, you know, even if they say, well, you know what, I don't agree with this, but I think a different pillar should have been X. I want to know that too.
Yeah. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today. I really appreciate your energy and who you are. And I love this conversation because as a leader myself, you know, I used to always think, you know, is there something wrong with me? You know, maybe I'm not that strong of a leader. Like maybe I shouldn't be a servant leader. I went through all of those things in my life, in my head, but my teams always stayed with me. Every job I've ever had, people do not leave if I'm leading them. And then when I left, they dispersed, you know? Yeah. So that was like confirmation for me that said a lot about my leadership. And so having this conversation with you was so like cathartic for me because it made me realize, like, see, Nina, living with integrity, even though people are saying things about you, or you're rising to the occasion, even though people are trying to stab you in the back, or all those kind of things that do happen in corporate, unfortunately, I always said this and I mean it. I always let my character and my integrity defend me. I don't need to defend myself.
If you have integrity, you don't need to defend anything.
Exactly.
All you need to do is stay on that pathway.
Yep.
People that are doing the negative things are going to show their skin, right?
Exactly what happened. Exactly. Yeah. So thank you, Jim. I appreciate you. Thank you so much. I'm sorry for the dogs barking and all that great stuff, but I really thank you for being here. Thank you so much.
I loved it. Thank you, Nina, for having
me. Thank you. Guys, I told you, right? Good human on the planet, right here with you on Straight Talk. Make sure that you follow Jim. I'm going to link all of his information below. I've already kept him past what I promised I was going to keep him, but I just like him so much. So guys, make sure that you follow him. I love you. This is Nina Perez, Straight Talk, No Sugar Added. And don't forget to comment, like, share, subscribe, especially if you comment. If you're the first three, you're going to get that book. So make sure you make it happen. Talk to you soon. Bye.